Devour the Podcast is for mature audiences only.
They're here.
To episode 56 of Devour the Podcast. I'm your host, Dave. Along with me is Jamie.
Hello.
And with us again is Bo.
And you can call me Swami Ted.
Oh, that fucking movie.
You can call me Al.
Anyway.
Asshole.
So how's everybody doing today?
I was doing all right. You're trying to break me again.
Nope.
No, I'm kidding. I'm doing well.
Care to elaborate?
Not really.
Fair enough. I'm doing well also, David. How about yourself?
I'm not bad. Working out the kinks of the new mic.
Yeah. You gotta get up on it. That's the thing. Get up on it.
I know what's exciting right now is that I'm redoing my bedroom because I'm buying new mattresses. I'm so excited.
Ooh.
I've been you don't understand. These mattresses that I have are awful. And so just sore all the time, and I just feel so old. I'm really excited to finally be able to get a good night's sleep. But do you know when I
Make
went
the difference.
To mattress
shopping?
It really does. Do you know do you have any idea how much the most expensive mattress was?
$6,000.
No. $13,383
wow.
And change.
God, I bet that thing is great.
It is. No, I don't like it. It's a Tempur-Pedic, which I do like quite a bit, but this one is it's like called the Grand Sleep or something like that, and it's like, and it's just
because you can also be buried in it. It doubles as a coffin. That's the genius of it.
You
That's
might be.
Grand.
The thing is, though, the foam is so dense that when you rest on it, it takes forever for your body to, because it conforms to your body, but it's like trying to snuggle up in silly putty. it's hard, and it takes forever to sink into. So I don't know. I don't find it very comfortable because if you go to roll over, it's gonna
go on.
Anyway, so
felt like there was an end to that sentence.
It's gonna be a little while, is what I said. Anyway, so I just thought that was fascinating though, because you can spend over $13,000 on your mattress, which is just really not necessary. It's so not necessary, but wow. So anyway, that's
my God, it's full of stars.
That's super exciting. Not that that's even exciting, but it is for me.
No, a good mattress will change your life. Like if you're sleeping on a shitty one for a while and then get a good one, it does. You feel so much better all the time. It's really nice.
So I really am excited. I cannot wait. That is something that I have neglected for so long. And it's It's just ridiculous. I'm like, I need, because really think about it. Ideally, you spend a third of your life on your mattress. I know I sound like a salesman. That's probably, I used to sell them years ago. But it's true, though. You know, yeah. if you sleep 8 hours a day, you know, that's a third of your life. And it really makes a difference. So
take it from Grandpa Bo, a good mattress and a good pair of socks.
Yeah, the kind that don't slide down all the time. So you don't have to wear sock garters.
I call them my thighs.
So what did you guys watch this week?
I watched The Last Exorcism on Saturday morning, like 9 o'clock Saturday morning, to determine whether or not I wanted to go see the sequel. And I really, you know, I did not dislike it as much as I remembered disliking it. And now watching it, I'm like, why did I have so many issues with it? Because I still did have some, but I don't know. I felt like I was into the characters more, and Cotton, the preacher right. guy, I don't know, it's especially the very beginning of it when it's just like, it's very documentary style, kind of following him around, like before we even get to the supernatural part of it. It's just fascinating. So I don't know. I would say that's probably worth a second watch if you watched it once and just thought, eh, you know, give another shot because it really made a difference. I still didn't go see the sequel, though.
Yeah. No, the guy who plays Cotton in that, I can't think of his name, but really good performance in that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was, I mean, he had these little, and I said this while I was watching, is that he sort of reminded me of Paul Newman, not the way he looked, you know, but it was his little mannerisms and things. He had this little smirky smile that he would turn toward the camera whenever he was pulling the wool over some unsuspecting oldster's eyes. And it just, there's, I don't know, something about him that kind of gave off that air of confidence, like cockiness almost, that is.
Right. He's a scamp.
So I'm watching him and I'm believing him, you know. It was pretty doggone good. I mean, his performance right. was.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I watched something else, but I left my list in the other room.
Doesn't count, Ben. Doesn't count. Didn't watch it.
I know. It's awful.
Bo? Aside from the films for tonight, I watched The Following, caught up on that, everything but the most recent episode. Mm. And, you know, as serial killer shows go, it's fine. You know, I mean, the first couple of episodes I thought were pretty strong, and it's kind of middling at this point, I feel. And then I saw Dread.
Oh, yeah.
3D.
How was that?
You know, I heard a lot of good things going into it about what a good action movie it was. And it was okay, but the thing I realized is no matter how shiny you make that movie, and there are good things about it, don't get me wrong, but it's still silly. Like, the whole Judge Dredd thing, the motorcycles are ridiculous looking. The uniforms kind of look silly. It looks great in a comic. I don't think it translates to the screen very well. Mm-hmm. And I know you would piss off the people who would really want to see a Dredd movie by changing that uniform, but I kind of would. Anyway, it was okay, but not great. I was really hoping for it to be surprisingly good, and it just kind of wasn't.
All right. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it for
me. Okay, so I watched, I didn't watch a whole lot this week because I was out doing stuff, which is, I know, shocking. I watched Resident Evil Damnation, the new CG animated Resident Evil movie, and I didn't finish it because it was getting really ridiculous. Like, I like the first...
Resident Evil?
Yeah, I know, right? I like the first one, Degeneration, because it was pretty good, and they kept a fairly logical plot going through it, but somehow the Japanese have decided that Resident Evil should be more like the movies, and that's kind of what this one was. Like, it starts off with this prologue about how this, basically setting up this fake former Soviet country that's now in civil war for some fucking reason, that they go on about this and then tell you that there's bioweapons being used. So you basically go through like the history of this country and why they're at civil war, and now there's a bioweapons being involved, and that's why Leon is there. But then as soon as we find out he's there, he's being told he has to leave because the US government's pulling out. It's so fucking convoluted and silly.
Albania.
It was ridiculous. I turned it off because it was just like, this is kind of dumb.
Where's on the age? I remembered the other thing. Haha. It was Amityville, The Haunting.
Which one is that? Is that the found footage one?
Yes.
Okay, and, okay. I haven't seen this one.
And let me tell you, don't bother.
Really?
It is the biggest Paranormal Activity ripoff I have ever seen. You'd think you were watching a Paranormal kind of Activity movie. All right. But no. There is not one likable character in this entire thing. I can't stand any of them. I want them all to die.
Isn't that one made by the Asylum?
I know that they made Paranormal Entity.
Right, and I thought, well, the cover itself for Amityville Haunting looked like it was probably an Asylum cover.
It may be, I'm not sure, but it was so bad. It was so bad.
Fair enough.
Is it on Watch Instant?
Yeah.
Watch that shit.
Yeah, well, you know, because I'd be curious to hear what you think about these characters, because I got to tell you, I didn't like them.
Yeah, well, now I can watch it safely knowing I can bail at any time and just say, oh yeah, Jamie was right, this is shit. So I don't have to watch the whole thing, but I might find enough. Like Blackenstein, the Black Frankenstein, was enough to tug me along by how incompetent it was.
Even though it was incomplete.
Yes.
Yeah. And a totally accurate grade.
Speaking of which, if you guys haven't seen it, there's a Blackenstein Goes for a Walk video that I made, which is available on YouTube and also Facebook.
Yeah, it's very funny.
It took entirely way too long for me to make. Just gonna say that.
You know, sometimes it's about the love of the game.
Yeah. So the other thing I watched was Silent Hill Revelation.
Mm.
So I wrote a review of this movie. It was so fucking bad. So if you like the first Resident or Silent Hill movie, don't watch Revelation, because it'll just piss you off. It doesn't make any fucking sense. They give you needless info dumps because they assume that you're too retarded to remember what happened in the last movie. There's a magical MacGuffin that gets brought in just to explain away how they got past the ending of the first film. That was never once mentioned in the previous film. They break the rules of the first film left and right for no real reason. It breaks its own rules. Like, there's a scene where, like, the Heather character, who, spoiler alert, is really Sharon, which you should have seen that shit coming. So there's a scene where this private detective is, you know, he's been sent to find her and her dad, and she's been having these visions of Silent Hill reality bleeding through on her side of things. And then he's killed by a monster from Silent Hill, even though he's not from the town, and they're not in Silent Hill.
Oh, okay.
They're in a mall. And he gets killed by this monster because he's with her. Yeah, it's that fucking stupid.
Okay, fair enough.
I was pissed. It was fucking terrible. And everyone involved with this movie should be ashamed of themselves. Specifically the writer-director. Because, yeah, fuck him.
For shame.
Carrie Ann Moss is in it, and she looks bored the entire time that she's in it. So does Sean Bean. Malcolm McDowell is in it, but he's chewing scenery, because that's what he does now.
Right. Goes big.
Yeah, it was fucking terrible. And, yeah. My friend desperately tried to explain to me that it was like the game, and I kept telling him that that's not a good enough excuse, and that an adaptation of something should make sense to people who haven't played it or read it, and this movie did not. So fuck Silent Hill Revelation. That's all I watched.
The ceremonial fuck this movie from David Anders.
4 pages I wrote about that fucking movie. 4 fucking pages.
Pages of venom. Yep.
So that's all I watched. We're going to skip Walking Dead this week because I did not get a chance to watch it yet.
But it was really good.
Oh, that's what I've heard. So I believe that is it for all of our intro stuff. Yes. Okay,
yes.
Cool. Then we'll move on to the news.
Our show is now on Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Good evening.
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny. Civil defense officials in Cumberland have told newsmen that murder victims show evidence of having been partially devoured.
Hey, sure, I'll do it for $50.
Beware the moon, David.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
Holy shit! She's a friend of mine!
Okay, Full Moon gets into the VOD biz, debuts Ooga Booga! Oh, that's the other thing I watched was Creep Van. Oh, we know.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. Following a successful preliminary run with fans, Full Moon Features is thrilled to officially announce their new video streaming service at www.grindhouseflix.com. Host to the weirdest, craziest, and most unbelievable grindhouse films from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and brand new world premieres, all from the convenience of a computer or mobile device via the Grindhouse app. The first film to make its world premiere on the service is Ooga Booga, a tongue-in-cheek grindhouse exploitation flick in the vein of Django Unchained, starring two-time Golden Globe-winning actress Karen Black, Golden Globe-winning actor Stacey Keach, Siri the curvaceous porn star, and internet sensation Maddox, creator of the self-proclaimed bestpageintheuniverse.com in his memorable film debut. Ooga Booga is directed by the prolific Charles Band, founder of Full Moon Features, and follows the murder of an innocent African-American medical student whose soul is transferred into the body of an obscure toy, eventually extracting his revenge by killing racists in the city.
Okay, yeah. So it's Black Devil Doll, essentially?
Basically.
That's exactly what I was picturing. To quote Band, we wanted to create an unparalleled movie site for impossible-to-find cult classics. This service will finally make it possible to discover the obscure films that played in decadent art house cinemas years ago, and be first to access our exciting world premieres, such as our newest feature film, Ooga Booga! For only $4.99 per month, fans can stream rare and bizarre film gems instantly on any device, including iPhone, iPad, Android, tablets, and desktops, with four new films being added to the library each month. Titles include new world premieres such as Ooga Booga on March 12th, and obscure favorites such as, should that be Necropolis?
Yeah.
Savage Island, oh wow, really? White Slave, Riot in a Women's Prison, and many others. Those who purchase single movies will have access to a permanent digital copy of the film. Renting is also an option for $1.99 per title. For more information, please visit www.fullmoonhorror.com. Now, really, do you guys feel... What do you feel is actually behind this? Like, do they really want people to be able to watch these old gems, or do you think they just want people to pay to watch their premieres?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd say it's probably an easy way for them to make some cash. You know, they've probably got this. It sounds like stuff that they probably had from the Wizard catalog that they still have the rights to and want to make some money off of it by not giving it to Netflix. So...
Right.
Throw it onto this shitty service they've created and call it good, and you know, release world premieres of their other shitty movie. It's fucking Full Moon, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, but I do love Full Moon. Do you know who doesn't? Is Doug Tilly. I was like, what?
Oh yeah. Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. He's not wrong to say that most of Full Moon's stuff is crap. Because it is.
But I don't know. I still have a love for it, not saying that it's good, just I love for it. I really don't see the reason to hate it, but you know, I don't know.
There's some nostalgia to that too. Back in the day, Full Moon, they weren't great movies, but they catered to a horror audience for
sure.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's shit like Skullheads or whatever. It's just now they're terrible. At one time, there were legitimately entertaining movies coming out Full Moon, and I don't know that that's the case anymore.
Well, that is a good point. You're right about that.
Yeah.
I saw Skullheads. I'm angry.
Okay. Up next, Universal sets DVD and Blu-ray date for Mama. Universal Studios Home Entertainment has announced Mama will hit DVD and Blu-ray and on demand May 7th. A digital download will be available. Yes? Oh, I thought you were going to say something. Digital download will be available to purchase on April 23rd. Head inside for the bonus features that that will be included on the DVD Blu-ray combo pack. Let's see. Included are the matriarchal secrets, an in-depth exploration of the digital and practical effects employed to shape the film's phantom presence, deleted scenes with commentary, original short with introduction by Del Toro and commentary, and feature commentary. Although Del Toro is not on any of the commentaries, so.
Well, why would he be? I mean, he just produced the thing.
No, I know. I'm just saying I didn't say I was expecting him to be.
No. I mean, I get you.
Yeah, David God.
Shut up, bro.
Look, don't make me have to separate you. Don't make me have to hit you with my ring hand.
Strong hand.
Okay.
I haven't seen that yet. I'm looking forward to that release.
Yeah, I saw it and I liked it. You know, I thought it was original and interesting.
You also like Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Oh,
shut up. I don't know. I haven't seen it. The previews didn't particularly do anything for me, so I'll check it out when it hits a video or Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's at least worth that. You know, I wouldn't suggest everyone run out and see it, I wouldn't have told everyone to run out and see it when it was out, but I will say it's at least worth. It's at least worth a rental.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, sadly, Dexter season 8 will be indeed the end for the Showtime series, and that makes me sad, but, you know, honestly, I guess it's about time. You know, how things kind of wind down. There have always been rumblings that the upcoming season of Dexter, its 8th, would be its last. Those rumblings are now reality. CBS head Les Moonves spilled the beans yesterday in an investor's call talking about the, quote, last season of Dexter beginning this June. How things will wrap up is unknown, but showrunner Scott Buck was previously quoted as saying, quote, Dexter is a serial killer, and serial killers only end in so many ways, and none of those ways seems to be particularly happy or encouraging. I think if we're true to who Dexter is, we're not going to end with Dexter walking off into the sunset. Yikes. All right, that season 8 begins June 30th. You know, shortly after season 7 ended, they had talked about what they were reluctant to say for sure whether or not this was going to be the last season coming in.
They were like, didn't they say 7 was supposed to be the last season?
I heard rumors of that before 7 began.
Mhm.
But I think that's sure of any show that's gone this long. And I think it's dipped in the ratings a bit as well,
mm-hmm.
that there's going to be that talk before every season, like, yeah, this may be it. But well, hey, it's good that they're on top of it, and they're just like, yep, this is it. Season 8, we're gonna go out the way we choose to.
8 seems to be a good, healthy number. You know, like, Newhart had 8 seasons. I think, I want to say Family Ties had 8 seasons. I don't know, just saying.
Yeah, yeah. I know Sons of Anarchy, Kurt Sutter has very publicly said we're doing 7 seasons of that.
Well, and like Babylon 5 was 5 seasons, or 4, actually, 4, well, whatever. Anyway, that, a planned storyline, I think those are kind of cool. Like, I really liked 24. I just didn't really feel the need to see so many days of it. Like, I liked the concept, but okay. Well, I'll be sad to see Dexter go, but it was fun while it lasted. Next up, Sony sets a release date for Resident Evil 6. Are you ready for another Resident Evil film? If you saw Resident Evil Retribution, the 5th chapter in the series, which grossed $221 million worldwide, you know they've left the door open to at least one more chapter in the series. When we spoke to director Paul W.S. Anderson prior to the start of Resident Evil Afterlife, part four, he said he had mapped out a story for a new trilogy which would carry the franchise into a sixth film. So you know he's ready. While we don't have a title for that sixth film, there is a confirmed release date. ShockTillYouDrop.com has learned Sony Screen Gems has set a debut date for September 12th, 2014, which means Anderson and star Jovovich will likely begin shooting the new film this fall. Story-wise, no details have been released, but when we last saw Alice, she was at the White House and facing a rather large threat with Wesker by her side. We'll have more details as they come in.
You know, I think Paul W.S. Anderson and Lynn Wiseman should co-direct a film in which their wives fought each other. Kate Beckinsale.
So it would be
Yeah, that's why she's in all those Underworld movies. Oh. He directs all those.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, I know that.
So.
Great. So there are two terrible franchises that are only being continued to go forward because the directors put their wives into tight outfits.
Yeah. So I'm saying smush them together. Just have one crappy movie a year featuring, you know, tightly clad hot women fighting zombies or the undead or vampires or werewolves.
Or whatever the fuck they're fighting in Resident Evil anymore. I don't even know.
I saw the fourth one. Well, Bo and I covered the fourth one.
Mm-hmm.
I saw part of the fourth one on TV and I was like, wow, this is terrible. So I've always kind of hated the Resident Evil series on principle. Like, I mean, I've liked parts of them for different reasons, but for the most part, they're not particularly good movies, and they're just so absurdly dumb in their storylines that I stopped caring.
It truly is unintentional camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think years from now, you're going to be able to look back at those movies and laugh your ass off.
I could do that now.
Well, true. But I think they'll stand up on that level.
Like, oh, I'm sure.
The same way that the movie Cobra is still watched by people.
Right, yeah, because I remember I watched the first Resident Evil, and I remember being kind of bummed out when I saw it, because it wasn't what I was expecting it to be. And they've progressively gotten dumber. Like, they keep putting characters from the games into it for some reason, because that's a great idea. And it's just like the plot becomes more and more convoluted and stupid, and you keep introducing characters from the games for no real apparent reason, and I just...
Oh, and the acting is shitty.
Yeah, it is. The CGI is shitty.
Yeah, they're crappy movies, but...
They really are.
They are hysterical. I mean, the dumbness of the films is entertaining on an ironic level, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, they're bad. Yeah. But you call it Resident Underworld. That's the movie.
They'll figure out some way to mash that crap together.
Ah, it's my dream.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry, move along.
Not a breast man, huh? Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, neither of them have any.
Right.
I don't know about Kate Beckinsale. I mean, not crazy.
They cinched her up really good. I mean, so for Van Helsing, so it looked like, you know, they were popping out, but.
She doesn't have a whole lot to pop out.
No.
Eh, fine.
Okay.
And I've seen Mila Jovovich naked enough movies to know. Bleh. I don't understand why people are like, oh my god, she's so hot. It's like, she's really not. She's kind of creepy looking now. She looks more like an alien now than she did in Fifth Element.
Oh. Okay, you has one sheet. Release date for American Mary. I do want to say I think Kate Beckinsale is... really, really beautiful. So there.
Yes.
Accelerator has announced a May 31st limited theatrical release date for American Mary, starring Catherine Isabel. In addition to this, the company has revealed the U.S. one sheet directed by Jen and Sylvia Soska. The film is the story of a medical student named Mary who is growing increasingly broke and disenchanted with medical school and the established doctors she once idolized. The allure of easy money sends a desperate Mary through the messy world of underground surgeries, which leaves more marks on her than the so-called freakish clientele. Appearances are everything. I totally forgot to mention that was the last story. I'm a douche. But anyway, that's the last story. You know, I have heard good things about American Mary.
Yeah, so have I.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that movie quite a bit. In fact, I do the periodic, you know, distributor hunt of like, is it coming straight to VOD? So that's, it's good news. I am very much looking forward to seeing that film.
Yeah, me. Yep. All right, and that's it for the news.
All right, cool.
Done.
So then we will be right back to talk about Creep Vans.
Creep Van. Yeah.
No.
First, he conquered YouTube. Then, he was on Cadaver Lab. Next came Cinema Corpse. And then, he was on your mom.
What? It totally happened.
Kruger Nation Horror Podcast. www.krugernation.com.
It came from the instant queue.
Are you sure this thing isn't going to fall apart on me as soon as I hit the road? Oh, how many girls have disappeared after a ride in this? Can we take a first spin? Just around the lot?
Please help me! Campbell!
Every time I look for you, you're somewhere else.
Have you seen it? That 70s van parked around here sometimes with a for sale sign in the window?
It looks like the poster child for rape prevention.
Hi, my name is Campbell. I'm calling on the van that's for sale, so if it's still available, please give me a call back.
Detective Tom McCarthy, Detroit Police Department. Who is this?
Why are you guys at my house, and what's going on?
Sir, your friend was in a serious accident last night.
Amy, something happened to Bob.
I like your van, man.
Calm down, all right? Let's not jump to any conclusions.
Amy, Bob is not okay. That favor, bro. How far are you away from Bubba's garage?
3 miles down the road. Why?
Because that's where we need to go to kill this creep.
Still want to buy a van?
Creep Van was released in 2012, and the synopsis is Campbell.
They never should have let it out!
I know, right? Campbell buys a used van, unaware that its mysterious owner has been torturing and killing victims with a host of elaborate booby traps. That's a terrible synopsis, because that's not at all what happens.
Yeah.
Directed by Scott McKinley.
It's more exciting.
Yeah. Written by Jim Bartu, Adam Jank, Ian Michaels, and Scott McKinley. Stars Brian Koldigish as Campbell Jackson. Amy Worrell as Amy, Gerald Emmerich as Mr. Kaufman, Colin Burnson as Swami Ted, Tanya Kaye as the irate woman at the gas station, and Mike Butler as the creep. Oh my fucking god. What a waste of an hour and 20 minutes.
I thought, when we were talking about this earlier, you had the best word for it. This is one of the dumbest movies we've seen in a while.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's called Creep Van.
Yeah, it's actually somehow worse than you expect it to be. Like, I didn't think that was possible.
Okay, I don't want this to be interpreted as me defending Creep Van in any way.
Please don't.
But I thought that the effects overall were fine.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was a bright spot.
All right, this is what I'll give Creep Van. It certainly looks like a movie.
Yes.
It's competently shot. The special effects are better than you expect, but they aren't worth writing home about.
At one point, Creep Van, the van that creeps, goes through a wall, and that was pretty impressive. You know, as far as low-budget effects work goes, right. I was like, oh, that looks legit. You know? Right. So, anyway. That is a positive.
That's all the positive things you could say about this, other than Lloyd Kaufman's in it for 2 minutes, because the rest of it is just, yeah.
Yeah, I just, who are these people that I kept hearing good things about this movie from? I swear I did, and I want to hunt them down.
They were lying.
Now.
Clearly they were lying, or they were being paid off, because this was fucking horrible.
Or they made it.
Yeah. Because this was a trying to be a horror comedy, which was neither funny nor horrifying.
And it's, oh God, it's so dumb. The whole montage with the, I guess his roommate, I never really understood who lived in that house.
Right, his weird roommate friend who wears a wrestling mask for no apparent reason.
Right, and then there's the montage of the, I guess, rough sex or something.
Right.
Between roommate and girlfriend before Creep Van, the van that creeps, busts through the wall. And I was kind of stunned. I was like, what does this have to fucking do with anything? You know, not that any element of this movie necessarily fits all that well together with the scene that comes after.
Right. Because, yeah, I think, like, when she first shows up and she's, like, topless, I was like, oh, it's the obligatory tits in the movie.
Right.
And that was it. You know, and then there was, like, the moment where he's, like, in the van with, he's having the fantasy about Amy, and I thought it was a man he was next to, because she looked like a man.
Yeah, yeah, Amy was kind of tranny-ish.
Yeah, but a fucking, ugh.
Yeah, not a good
movie.
It wasn't even funny bad.
Not even a tiny bit. Not even, I don't ever want to see this movie ever again.
Right. And it's not even bad enough to make me angry. I was just bored.
No, I just don't want it. Yeah. Do not want. Yeah.
It's a very forgettable movie. Aside from the title and a couple of the gore scenes, I will remember nothing of this movie.
Right.
No, the only thing that entertains me about it is me going creep vile. For some reason that tickles me. But other than that, no.
Yeah, and you know, David's right. They were trying to play some of this funny, and it's not at all funny.
Nope.
I mean, I will even grant you that Attack of the 50-Foot Cheerleader or whatever that piece of shit was, there were moments where it was like, okay, that's kind of clever. They're at least trying.
Right.
This is not even an effort to be legitimately funny.
Yeah. I agree. I don't love it.
Yeah, no, I think we've got a consensus, and I don't know that, I mean, we can go into the details of why this is terrible, but it's pretty much bad acting, bad story, bad performances, ridiculous notion.
Well, what really was the story? Because I was trying to reconcile what I was watching with what the synopsis said while I was watching it, and I somehow got lost along the way, I think. Because I know that I kind of checked out for a few minutes, and then when I came back, I was like, oh shit, what did I miss? And then I'm like, I don't care. So,
well, it's a guy who works at a car wash, right, or has just gotten a job at a car wash, calls about a van he sees an ad for sale.
Right, because he's a loser who doesn't have a car for some reason.
He doesn't have a car, or really, it doesn't seem any thrust to his life.
Right.
He is aimless and unlikable.
Yes. And apparently likes tranny looking men. Or women.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God bless her. She did fuck a tranny. So our hapless Campbell, I think,
yes,
is his name. He tries to buy a van. Guy's kind of weird. And then calls back and says, hey, you're gonna buy my fucking van. And he's like, no, I'm not. I bought something else. And said owner of said van is just kind of randomly killing people.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
doesn't
like,
be any rhyme or reason to it until he he kind of focuses on this guy because he called.
Right.
I mean, am I missing anything or
no,
details?
I'm pretty sure that's everything because even I was.
All right. Well, that's what I got from it. I just thought maybe I was missing
something.
Okay.
Yeah. And the ending was fucking stupid. I'm sorry. That wasn't funny. That wasn't clever. That was just stupid.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at this. Look what he did. It was so funny. No. No, not at all.
No. It's not funny. It's an unlikable film. Yeah. Maybe that's why it's so forgettable. You just don't want to be associated with it.
It should be shunned.
Yes. There, you know, you could carve like 90 seconds of that movie and show it to people and be like, hey, look at this guy get run over. It's kind of cool.
Right.
You know? Oh, yeah, you're right. That's a pretty neat effect. That is as good as this movie ever gets. Is that's kind of a neat effect.
Yeah.
That's the peak.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's all downhill from there.
All right.
It's true. But that is not enough to sustain it.
Ratings.
Nope.
1 star.
Jamie?
So help me God if you give it a 4.
No! No, I'm wavering between a half a 1. I'll say 1. I'll give it 1. There were some. No,
it was certainly a movie, and I'll give it that much. It's okay.
It was a movie.
I've seen movies that were way worse because they looked like shit. This at least looked like a movie. It was fucking dumb and pointless, but it was certainly a movie. So 1 out of 5.
Oh, we do have a consensus. Yeah.
So next week we're gonna watch Darkness Falls. Up next we're gonna talk about Scream.
Good evening, folks. Do you enjoy action and adventure? Romance and comedy. How about long strolls on the beach and a fine champagne by moonlight? Do you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain? Or would you rather listen to some in-depth conversation about film where many timely and poignant observations and witticisms are made? Mo here from the Drunk on VHS podcast. And if you like any of those things, then I have some bad news for you. Drunk on VHS has none of these. But you should listen anyway. Because I asked him nicely and said, please. Oh, wait. Please. Tune in every Wednesday for new episodes exclusively at
CouchKitchen.com.
Bring the family. Bring your friends.
Dixon was adored by all the children. Whenever one of them lost a tooth, they would bring it to her in exchange for a gold coin, earning her the name the Tooth Fairy. But when two children didn't come home, they blamed Matilda, and they hanged her in the light. Now, they thought the past was dead and buried, but it's about to come back with a vengeance.
You don't know what you're dealing with.
Tooth Fairy?
What the hell was that? I see these things at night. I don't know what's real or what's not.
She won't come in the light.
Who?
You know who.
Or stay alive. Just walk towards my voice. Come on, it's just 3 steps.
How close is it?
This winter, evil rises, darkness falls.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hello, Sydney. Remember me?
What do you want?
It's time, girlfriend. Don't you know history repeats itself?
Someone is taking their love of sequels one step too far.
Last night, two college students were brutally murdered.
Police are everywhere.
The girl was stabbed 7 times.
Ouch.
Hi, Gail Weathers, author of the Woodsboro Murders.
She's an opportunist.
Be kind, she saved our lives.
Yeah, I know, I read all about it in the book.
I can't wait to see the movie.
Someone doesn't want the terror to end.
Sydney!
Did you know the victim?
Did you feel threatened by the murder?
What am I supposed to do?
If there is some freaked out psycho, they're probably already in your life.
Okay, so you just want to sit here and wait to see who drops next?
The way I see it, someone's out to make a sequel. So it's our job to observe the rules of the sequel. Number one, the body count is always bigger. Number two, the death scenes are always much more elaborate.
How do we find the killer, Randy? That's what I want to know.
Well, let's look at the suspects.
I'm not interrupting anything, am I?
It's him. He can see us.
Do you want to die tonight?
Is that the best you can do?
Why not set your goals higher, huh? You want to be one of the big boys? Manson? Bundy? OJ?
What's your favorite scary movie?
Showgirls.
Absolutely frightening.
And now our feature presentation.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
Tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Oh, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
Someone is playing a deadly game.
It all began with a scream over 911.
Someone who's seen one too many scary movies. Now, he's taken his love of fear.
Hello?
Hello, Sydney.
One step too far.
Do you like scary movies?
What's the point? They're all the same. Some stupid killer stalking some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be going out the front door. It's insulting.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a scary movie. Number one, you can never have sex.
Me.
Never, ever, ever under any circumstances say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
Get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
He didn't make the rules.
The police are always on track. If they watch prom night, they save time.
He just kills by them. Don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Don't try to hide.
Everybody's a suspect!
Yeah. You're not scared, are you?
Scream.
Scream. This was released in 1996. Synopsis is, a killer known as Ghostface begins killing off teenagers. As the body count begins rising, one girl and her friends find themselves contemplating the rules of horror films as they find themselves living in a real-life one. This is directed by Wes Craven, written by Kevin Williamson, stars Drew Barrymore as Casey, Roger Jackson as the voice on the phone, Kevin Patrick Wells as Steve, Neve Campbell as Sydney, Skeet Ulrich as Billy, Lawrence Hetch as Mr. Prescott, Courtney Cox as Gail Weathers, W. Earl Brown as Kenny, Rose McGowan as Tatum, David Arquette as Deputy Dewey, Matthew Lillard as Stu, Joseph Whip as Sheriff Burke, Jamie Kennedy as Randy, and cameos from Linda Blair as the obnoxious reporter, Wes Craven as Fred the Janitor, and Henry Winkler as Principal Hembree. We're not going to put a spoiler warning on this because it's 17 years old and everybody right, knows Scream. This movie.
Yeah.
So
everyone knows 17 year olds are always spoiled. But I love this movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay. Who wants to start off with this one?
I'll go on this. All right, so I am not a crazy fan of slashers, as everyone who listens knows. So when I really, really like this movie. You know, it's one of those films that even if you don't like slashers, it transcends that genre. It's just, it's clever enough, and it still is a clever film, that no matter what reservations you have about the genre, like, this is a movie that non-horror fans can watch and respond to, because it's very aware of its horror-ness. And so I think that carries this movie a very long way. And once we get into the sequels, I think that's where sometimes things kind of fall apart. And this movie just kind of gets it all right. I'm real curious to know if some of the references to other Wes Craven films existed in that script prior to Wes Craven being on board for it. I think that's kind of interesting. But I think it's a really, really good scare film. You know, like, the tension kind of works in it. The comedy mostly works in it. Jamie Kennedy's character really grated on me this time.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think it's just because it has become such a thing, you know? And
I think it kind of is the performance, though, because the scene that really brings me out of it is when he's watching.
Oh, he's on the sofa on drunk. The couch. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was like, this is the worst drunk performance I've ever seen. So, and I'm sure that was, you know, take 12 or something, but
yeah, no,
that's not a great scene.
It is annoying.
Yeah. But in watching it again, it was kind of interesting because I found Dewey to be much more likable than I had previously. And I enjoyed Courtney Cox's Gale Weathers a lot more than I had in the past. So
scene where he's looking at her and he's like, they fall down and he's looking at her and he's like, my whole life.
Oh,
you know, right. She's like, is that what you're looking for? And he's like, my whole life. That was ad-libbed. Isn't that sweet? And he meant it.
That is fair.
Now they're divorced, but whatever.
Are they?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know.
Sadly.
Apparently he had a little bit of a booze and lady problem. But personal stories aside. I feel like I'm kind of mediating a bit my praise of this movie, and I don't mean to. It's just that I'm such the guy to not like this movie. Mm. The fact that I do as much as I do. Is pretty notable. Like, it really does work 90% of the time, which is a crazy high percentage for this type of film.
Right.
So you cannot deny the effect that this film had on the mainstream as far as horror is concerned. This was, for a time, almost to the ranks of Rocky Horror Picture Show. Not there, obviously, but when I say almost, I mean, teens were gathered in the theater reciting it from beginning to end, just over and over and over and over and over again. It was huge. It brought back the slasher. It brought Craven back to us. It did this, you know, like, what? Drew Barrymore got killed in the first, just the very first.
First 15 minutes.
I think it's, it's about 14.
So it's. It was so innovative, and I remember the first time I went, when I went to see it, I actually saw it in the theater twice, but I remember when I went to see it the first time, I had no idea what it was about. This, again, is during the time when I didn't have cable, and I had no idea, I had nothing, like, I didn't know, I'd never seen a trailer for this. It was just like when I went to see From Dusk Till Dawn, because I had a friend who worked at the movie theater, and she would always drag me to go see movies with her on their free night. Well, then I had no idea what I was walking into. But so I remember I sat down and I was blown away from beginning to end. I enjoyed the hell out of it. And I found it very effective. Like, it was actually scary. I was so into it that, you know, it was scary. It was surprising. I was moved once again, you know, and I just remember coming away from that. Just, it was almost like a I don't know, it was like a religious experience, you know?
Yeah.
And that sounds so lame, I know, but...
Well,
I think
you really...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you really can't undersell that first, you know, 15 minutes of film. Because that was shocking at the time. Not just because it was Drew Barrymore, but because it was intense and it kept going. And the end of it was violent as shit. Yeah. And that scene bought them a lot of goodwill for the rest of the movie.
I mean, this movie used cell phones against us, which was at this time, you know, this was the big thing. Everybody was starting to have them, you know, sort of like on that cusp of only drug dealers and doctors having them. And then, you know, and then like everyone having them. So... And, you know, it sort of gave us a reason to be afraid of that technology that we were just getting a grasp of. I thought that was, I don't know. I mean, the only thing that really bothers me about this film at times, and not even all the time, but it's Kevin Williamson's, like, really fake teen dialogue. Because I don't know where the hell these teenagers are from that he writes for, but I don't, there was one line in particular last night that I was just like, ah! Because... For 17 years, this line has just gotten under my skin. And now I can't think of what it is. Of course. God damn it. It's something that Tatum...
All right, Jamie's checked out.
I am. No, 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 no. I just have so many things rolling around in there. It's like a bingo machine in my head. You never know what number's going to pop out.
Never a complete card, though, is it?
Y'all be. But, anyway, and it's, God, I wish I could remember what the hell it was, because it's so funny, and it's just completely ridiculous, and no teenager would ever say it. But that's not all the time. Most of the time, in this particular, he was really bad about that in Dawson's Creek. But most of the time, in this particular example, it's not that bad. It's a clever script. It's you didn't see it coming. It was, God, I cannot just talk about how much this really helped to change the face of horror. I mean, it did. It came along at a time when we needed it to.
Yeah.
And his fans were suffering. Yeah.
You can certainly tell how seismic it was when this movie came out by The Imitators soon after.
Oh,
you know, you immediately had that rush of, you know, I Know What You Did Last Summer and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the Prom Night remake and all that shit. I mean, that's all kind of part and parcel. Yeah. But, you know, it's sort of the.
Well, in this,
You know, the ancestry of that.
Right. Well, in the wake of Scream, we had I Know What You Did Last Summer and Urban Legend and Halloween H2O and Valentine and.
Oh, Valentine.
Valentine was rough.
Any number of other fucking 90s slasher movies. So.
Well, and because of that, Scream gets shit on.
Oh, yeah, it does.
It's lumped in with these imitators that came after when you cannot blame the original product for those who came after. And if you take the original product and you look at it on its own, it is a really good movie. I mean, it just stop laying the shit on it. It's good.
Yeah.
Give it credit because it is. I mean, and it
I think it's hilarious when they yank the dad out because logically I'm like, where have they been keeping him? Have they just been feeding him dad kibble in the trunk or something?
That's true. I did notice a mistake last night though that I have never noticed before. Oh. And that was when the dad is on the kitchen floor, like kind of kneeling, and he puts the phone and then the voice machine into his pocket. He puts them in one order. And then later on, just to like, it flips to something else and then comes right back and they're in a different order. And you know damn well the dad didn't fix it because his hands are tied behind his back. So I thought that was just a little something that I noticed. But and the performances in here, I just have always loved Matthew Lillard. He's in this, he's funny, you know, and.
The mom and dad are going to be so mad at me is really funny. That he really does sell that line. That was really funny. Yeah.
So this was 96. I was 10 when this came out, which makes me feel incredibly old.
What?
I had to do the math the other day. I was like, when did this come out? Oh, shit. So I don't remember seeing commercials for it, but I remember coming back from like Christmas break, because this came out over Christmas, I remember. And a girl came in from we were talking about what we did over our Christmas vacations. And this girl was like, oh, I went and saw this movie, Scream. And I was like, what the fuck? And it wasn't until 97 when it hit VHS that I finally saw it. And it fucking just blew me away. This was probably one of the first like modern horror films I'd ever seen at that point. Probably the first slasher I'd ever seen. And it was just amazing. Just a great, great movie, great violence, great gore, great characters, great dialogue. Just amazing. Amazing fucking movie. So much so that I've seen the sequels in the theater except for 4, and would watch them on VHS on a regular basis, because I loved Scream 1, 2, and 1 and 2 so much. I don't remember a lot about 3 because, yeah.
Man, I saw Scream so many fucking times. It was so weird when this movie came out on video. Everyone I know got it for Christmas. And that includes my mom, my two roommates. So we had 3 copies of it in our house. This one friend of mine got it on DVD and on VHS. For Christmas. I mean, it was just everywhere. And then it's like, I remember I went home for Christmas that year. So I'm just like popping by friends' houses, you know. And I swear, everywhere I go, we end up watching Scream. And I must have seen it over Christmas just 6 or 7 times. And it's just one of those movies that I've watched. And so many times that when I said I'm watching Scream for Devourer this week, Jen was like you don't need to. And I'm like, well, now right. I don't need to, but I want to. You're like, it's been a while, you know, I wanna
watch. Yeah, that was
it.
My thing. Like I hadn't watched any of them in probably 4 or 5 years. I just hadn't watched them. I'd been watching other stuff, you know. And I forgot how fucking good this movie is. Like,
yeah, really, really good.
The opening sequence is still fantastic. You know, it's noticeable, a little bit more noticeable now where some of the cuts were made, just to make sure that they got the R with some of the gore stuff. But that opening sequence is still super effective. Drew Barrymore is fantastic. Very clever way of doing things. I mean, the technology is obviously very dated now, almost 20 years later, but it still feels pretty contemporary.
It does. I made the comment that it holds up very
well. I'm constantly amused by the gigantic cordless phones.
The cordless phones.
Yeah. And then Billy's phone, when it drops in Cindy's bedroom, I'm like, oh my god, my dad had that same phone. I remember that phone. So that sort of thing is kind of funny, and just sort of like, oh my god, look at that. We've come so far now that phones are like, you know, crazy small. But, you know, and then when you've got, it's a long movie. Like, I forgot this was almost 2 hours long, but it doesn't feel like it because it moves so quickly and it has a really good pace to it. And, you know, you've got all these different things going on with, you know, how they reveal stuff with, you know, you've got the opening death that gets you into it. And then we're introduced to Sydney and Tatum. And then we find out all the stuff about Sydney's family and her mom. And, you know, Billy, of course, and Stu, and Randy is sort of the comic relief. And his scene in the video store is a bit grating this time.
You know, although the thing I like about that scene is knowing, you know, the who the killers are.
Oh, right.
When he's having that conversation, it's fun to watch them react because they do play it like, oh yeah, I'm it.
Right.
You're talking to the guy. And seeing their reactions in that light is really fun.
Yeah, I think it's kind of an interesting thing that when you watch the movie now, knowing who the killers are, they kind of almost give themselves away on any number of scenes. Just the way they're reacting to things. You're just like, you guys are not good at hiding this at all. But when you see it the first time and you don't know who it is, you know, it obviously plays much differently.
Yeah. And, you know, and Wes Craven was real smart about throwing in those red herrings like the principal mm-hmm. and things like that. Mm-hmm. That he
sheriff
really
at one point.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely saw those giallo kind of influences in this film of that, you know, who is the mass killer thing. And it works, you know. Like I said, it kind of transcends the genre. One of those movies that reaches not just mainstream appeal, but mainstream influence in a big, bad way.
Definitely.
And, yeah, it is... like you said, going back and watching it now, I don't know that I've seen it since... I think I've seen the sequels more recently. Mm-hmm. And so I think it colored my perception of the original.
Yeah.
You know? And because I was so disappointed with, like, 4, for example, going back and watching this, it was like, oh, there's no fucking... You know, of course this is why they made 2, 3, 4, and 5 if they mm-hmm. could. You know, this movie just fires on all cylinders. Yeah. It really is an impressive piece of
work.
Yeah,
and it's kind of fun to look back on it as, you know, there's the very 90s kind of fashion things about it. You're just like, oh my God, they kind of stand out. But it's also like from it's like that weird moment where you kind of have the disconnect of, oh yeah, like Courtney Cox and Nev Campbell were huge TV stars when this movie came out. Like that was totally on... That never happened. You know, that was just not a thing that was going on at that point. So, like, this is, you know, having them in this kind of legitimized it. And then as the sort of horror boom hit again in the 90s, we started seeing more TV stars showing up in horror movies like David Boreanaz and Valentine and Jennifer Love Hewitt. And I know what you did.
I think the CW would just write WB would just write it into their contract.
You have to be in I think that's kind of the thing, is that, like, this is such a... So, yeah, Jamie, you're absolutely right. This movie does tend to get a lot of flack from people because it did sort of spawn this influx of imitators, because it was such a smart script and it was such a well-done film that everyone's like, oh, let's cash in on Scream. And you kind of can't just cash in on it because... It was kind of lightning in a bottle, which is something I'm sure we'll get to once we get to the sequels, because granted, I like the second one, but you know, the spark of the first one isn't really there with the sequels like it was with the first one.
Right. Well, and it was the influence in particular is the notion that characters in a horror movie have seen a horror movie before.
Right.
And that was dramatically different from everything else you saw in a horror movie.
Right, because that had never happened before.
Yeah, and that's, you know, maybe Fright Night would be an example, although it's not addressing the larger genre.
No.
And that's kind of what Scream did, and that's why it was, not only influential,
right,
but it just changed the way that horror movies got made for a long time. Mm-hmm. And still does.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear Scream referenced a lot by, you know, particular producers in the genre and things like that, where, you know, everyone knows this movie. Mm-hmm. Everyone can use this as a reference point for a particular style of self-awareness.
Right.
And Cabin in the Woods, I think, kind of evolved on that a bit, but it's certainly a spiritual successor.
Certainly. And, you know, this was sort of the movie that really got me into the genre more seriously, because, like I said, this was like the first modern horror movie I'd seen at that point. And, you know, I became a huge, huge fan of these movies. So, and, you know, now coming back to it so much after so long and having not seen this one after so long, it's like, oh, you know, there's the little funny things that's going to stand out, like I said, the 90s fashion and the gigantic phones and things like that, but it's still such a good fucking story, and even though I know who the killers are from the beginning, it's still so fucking good.
Yeah, and a lot of people forget what a nasty little movie this is.
Oh, yeah.
It's violent as shit. I mean, people really get bloodied up mm-hmm. and not in the comfortable, you know, kind of action movie way.
Right.
I mean, people die slow sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's...
Yeah, but it's fun.
It's aggressive.
Yeah, it is. This is really a vicious slasher.
It is, yeah. But it's fun.
Oh yeah, totally.
Oh, absolutely. You know? And it kind of revels in it. You know, it knows that you've got to push the envelope, and this movie does it in pretty much every way. Mm-hmm. And it's yeah. I mean, you know, now we're kind of parodying each other, but it really just is an incredibly well-made slasher. And beyond that, incredibly well-made horror film. So, you know, it belongs in every collection.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I would like to say it was a triumphant film for Craven, who,
yeah,
with most fans, and myself included, feel that he is very hit or miss.
Well, yeah.
But when he hits dead on. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, was a bullseye.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with you there. Like, this is easily as good as Nightmare on Elm Street, if not better.
I actually prefer this to Nightmare on Elm Street, yeah. But
this one, you know, this, me, yeah,
I'm,
this one's,
I'm Team Jason.
This one
anyway,
sticks so. The landing much better than Elm Street did.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, the actors in this are considerably better than in Elm Street.
Yes.
Yeah, sad but true. But yeah, you know. And I don't know what Neve Campbell is doing now. I'm sure she's still performing.
Yeah, I think she's been in a couple of movies fairly recently, but...
But she's really good in this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's fantastic in this. I mean, everybody's fantastic in this. I mean, Courtney Cox is fantastic. Skeet Ulrich? What the fuck happened to him?
Oh, Skeet.
He was amazing in this, you know. Jamie, you were saying Matthew Lillard was... You like Stu in this. I do, too. He's a little over the top at times. And I remember him, I think it was on More Stories, he was doing an interview, and he talked about Scream, and he's like, yeah, I went back and watched it, it's kind of hard to watch, because I'm so, like, so over the top in some scenes. It's like, yeah, he is kind of big, goes kind of big with some of those scenes, but at the end, it totally works. And you,
oh, yeah.
And it makes sense, because it's like, well, Billy's the kind of the more methodical, cold-blooded killer of the two, whereas... You know, Stu seems to be more just bouncing off the walls with the energy of what he's done, sort of thing. So that comes through more in his just day to day stuff.
Spitting all over the place.
Right.
Well, and he makes that turn too at the end, where he becomes so pitiful.
Right.
You know, like the mom and dad line, but you know, I mean, him just leaning
over
the table.
Phone,
and, yeah, and like, so what's your excuse? Like peer pressure. I'm very sensitive.
Right.
I'm far too sensitive. Aww.
Yeah.
See, poor and Stu. Stu was almost childlike, and he was there. I felt a definite evil. Sort of behind the, or not necessarily an evil, just an anger, a hatred, a need to just kill things.
From Billy,
yeah. Thank you. And with Stu, it was, I don't know, it was almost like he was a kid in a candy store. Yeah.
Yeah, you died. And that definitely
it was definitely a different. There were different motivations for the two of them.
Right. Billy was much more focused on getting revenge for his mom leaving him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Stu was just sort of along for the ride. You know, like it seemed like Stu was much more in it for the thrill of it. Whereas, you know, Billy was the more focused, like, I'm doing this for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And he gets irritated with Stu when Stu doesn't take it seriously. Mm-hmm.
Which I think is what you kind of see in his eyes when they're setting themselves up at the end for the, you know, when they're supposed to be the survivors, and, you know, he stabs Stu more than he should.
Right.
Kind of like, no, fuck you.
I love the sound in this movie because you can hear his blood hitting the floor. Mm-hmm. Just drip, drip, drip while he's standing there, and it's great.
The whole wrap up, with the exception of my problem with where has Daddy been the whole time,
right?
Still unanswered, but all of that really works. I'm not crazy about the, you know, not in my movie thing at the end. I think that's a little heavy handed,
yeah.
But it still kind of works. Like it, you know, by that point, I've bought into it. And I like David Arquette very little in most movies. And I think he's really, really kind of charming in this.
Yeah, you feel bad for him when Tatum's, like, fucking with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as dopey as he is, like, not seeing the fact that Gale Weathers is using him and all this right. stuff. I mean, he's got no sense of self-awareness at all. And, you know, but that also makes him kind of strangely lovable, too.
Yeah.
That, you know, he's dopey because he's good-hearted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a really fun character. And but they all are. I mean, they're all well-defined. Even Sydney isn't just the victim. She's also having this, you know, personal crisis about, is the man who I thought, you know, or was the man who I thought murdered my mother really the guy who did it?
You know, is my you know, the idea that is her mom who she thought her mom was?
Yeah, and kind of having to come to terms with that. And I think that's handled with a pretty delicate touch. Mm-hmm. And comes off really well. And all the characters, with the exception of maybe Rose McGowan in the film, I don't know that she's got too much of an arc besides being just kind of the bitchy friend. But everybody else seems to take a journey.
Right. Well, she takes a journey into the top of a garage door.
Right. Which is a pretty gnarly little effect, too.
Yeah. Apparently it was considerably more violent, but they had to cut it down.
Yeah, they had to make a lot of cuts for this movie. The Casey scene in the beginning, he had to chop some off, and they were kind of hardcore with it. Only you still ended up with a very decently gory film,
oh, yeah.
I thought.
Absolutely.
You know?
Especially for a movie from 1996. Like,
yeah.
That's what's so surprising about it now, is that, like, this is a pretty fucking gory movie for 96. Like, by today's standards, it's kind of tame. I mean, it's still bloody, but I mean, by today's standards, this is, you know, a lighter R than what we would see today, probably.
Than, say, an Evil Dead.
Right.
I mean, the Red Band trailer is gorier than...
Than this entire Scream. Movie was, yeah. I mean, totally.
So. But, yeah, it still packs a punch, though, I
Oh,
think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's still a fantastic movie. You know, it works so fucking well.
Yeah.
I'm really, really glad that it still holds up as well as it does.
It does age very, very well.
Yeah.
I'm curious, in light of this, I feel like I may like 2 more than I remember liking it, because I was so pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed 1 again.
Mm-hmm.
Which was in my library, to my credit. I do own the movie, I just didn't watch it enough, and now it will certainly make the wave into rotation more frequently.
Yeah.
Good. Good for you.
Okay, so let's go ahead.
I've learned as a person.
Let's go ahead and get
I'm
to
I'm proud
grades.
Of you for that.
Ratings. I think, oh man, it's hard to rate this movie because there's the cultural and genre influence, and then there's the movie itself.
Mm-hmm.
The movie itself is a solid A.
Okay.
But given what it became, and like I said, all the effects that it had in later films, you know, I think you got to go A+ on this. I think that's where this movie belongs.
All right. Then we're going to put you down for an A+. Jamie?
Yes.
He said almost exactly the same thing that was about to come out of my mouth.
Okay.
Except I was going to say it, you know, kind of sexier.
I felt like that was sexy.
All right. Yeah, I got to give it an A+. I mean, the movie, aside from all of its cultural impact and all of that, it's just a fantastic fucking slasher movie. And really one of the best modern slashers ever made, period.
Yeah, maybe besides the original Halloween, I don't know that there's one better.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, this one really, really changed everything. And for the better, mostly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was the next logical evolutionary step in that kind of movie.
Right. We needed Scream to get to where we're at now, basically.
Yeah, and Wes Craven is just enough of a genius to jumpstart that evolution.
Right.
Like that, if Scream could come out today, and had there not been a previous Scream, would still be as impactful.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, it like I said, it ages really well. The themes of that movie and what it represents is, you know, irreproachable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's about it, and we'll be right back to close out the show.
I say every house in America should have an electric chair. And every man just once in his life should sit in it. Just so that he can feel the power of millions of gallons of electricity flow through his veins.
I got an electric chair, that's all I need. You get an electric chair, Sheldon, you don't have to worry about the audience. You get an electric chair, you can tell them anything you want. As long as it's real. You get yourself an electric chair and it'll sit there all night long. Kind of a funny idea, sitting in an electric chair and doing a show. Well, think of the therapeutic value of an electric chair and all the money it is. Yes, an electric chair in every home.
The Electric Chair, a show about horror. ElectricChairShow.com.
Electric Chair. Wow.
All right, that is it for episode 56 of the Devour the Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. Next week, we'll be covering Darkness Falls and Scream 2 as the next installment of our Scream retrospective.
Woo!
Unbridled enthusiasm.
Yes, indeed.
So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited that, like, this movie has set the bar high, of course, mm-hmm. So it's been long enough since I saw Scream 2 and 3 that I remember very little from either of those movies.
I remember most of part two, actually, because I watched it so many fucking times on VHS. Three, though, I'm really hazy on three.
I think that one ended in the movie theater, I want to say.
No, the third one ended at somebody's house, I want to say.
Okay.
You want to say?
Shut up. Yeah, because I think the second one ended in one ended in the theater.
It was in the play
right.
theater.
All right. And Darkness Falls, which involves
a
scary...
The second one started in the movie theater.
Right, because they're watching Stab.
With Jada Pinkett and...
Omar Epps, I think?
Omar Epps, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But, so Darkness Falls, Evil Tooth Fairy.
Yep.
Yeah.
How scary is that shit?
Not
very. It's
not.
It's not particularly... Mm-hmm. It's a PG-13.
It's not at all. But, you know...
Really?
Yeah, I remember seeing it.
I saw this in the theater.
Oh, I didn't. I watched it on VHS, but I remember thinking it was pretty okay. Or maybe it was DVD. I don't remember. Doesn't matter. Anyway, final thoughts before we head out, folks?
No, not necessarily. Do I have any?
Okay. She was frightened and ran.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Anything else? Yay.
No. Sorry, I don't know what... Something weird just happened. Okay, anyway.
Your water broke?
Oh! Yeah, speaking of that, I want to wish a congratulations to Jason.
Oh, yes, on the...
Yeah, little baby Molly was born today. Yep. And tried like hell to get him to name her Jamie for months. He won't do it. But, and the reason is that he's even thought of it, not because of me, but just in general, he thought of the name, but it would be Jamie Lloyd.
Right.
And so, he wanted to.
You muted yourself.
Fucking shit. What's the last thing you heard?
He was.
Okay. What came before that?
You said you were trying to get him to name her Jamie, but he said it was going to be for Jamie Lloyd, but.
Oh, right. But it would, that would make it Jamie Lloyd,
right.
And you know. And so he didn't want to, for obvious reasons, he didn't want to do that. So anyway, baby Molly, so congratulations, and I'm so happy for him.
Congratulations, sir.
Yeah, no.
You have procreated now.
Well, for the second time. He has a little boy, too.
Well, then never mind.
For anyone who hasn't heard it, the very first episode of Liking It is available on Horror.
Yes, it is.
Which is my all werewolf show. Mm. And so, yeah, that'll be fun. And Bo is going to be joining us for Silver Bullet.
Awesome.
Oh, that's right. I cannot wait. I'm going to be watching that shit tomorrow.
First episode features Doug Tilley, number one super guy.
That's right. Yeah, Doug was a dream and came on to fill in the gap when my regular co-host Craig was just rough. Mm-hmm. We couldn't get shit together, but finally worked out, and you know, I don't hate it. So yeah, it was fun.
Good,
excellent, and you edited that too.
I did. That was my very first time. And there are, I do want to say, however, in my defense, there are some things in there that sound like bad editing cuts. Like they, and they are not.
That's just how Jamie talks.
No. Craig, or particularly when it's Craig, we were having some issues with his mic. So it sounds like, you know, it's like stuttering quite a bit or cut, you know, here and there. And I did, there was nothing I could do about it. So there might have been, but I don't know how to do it. So we'll put it that way. But I did edit it, and it was pretty. Jason put it together for me, but I did all the, I edited all the segments, and I mean, it was really fun. It was a whole lot of fun.
Yes, and soon when we do Silver Bullet, I will do an inordinate amount of Gary Busey impressions. You will get more than the RDA.
He's gonna fuck me up every second. He's gonna be payback for all these Devour episodes that he's had to edit out my ramblings. Other than that, I just want to tell everyone I love you all, as usual. Keep circulating those tapes. And yeah, talk to you soon. Where's our listener feedback?
That's a good question.
What's up
no
with
these? No one fed back.
No, they didn't.
The Facebook group has been pretty active, but
no, and I do speak to quite a few of our listeners, you know, all the time. Mm-hmm. But you guys, let us know you're out there.
Yeah, Bo.
Yeah, I'd just say thanks again to everyone for listening. Once again, glad to have Jamie back. Second week in a row, a new personal best following her break.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yes. So, thank you once again for everybody for listening. Next week will be fun, theoretically. Hopefully I'm not disappointed by Scream 2, and hopefully Darkness Falls is not bad.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Can't be worse than Creep, man.
Creep? Well, no. I don't ever need to say that again.
Nope.
It's retired.
Yep.
I will.
Episode, what are we, 56?
Yep.
Episode 56, the end of Creep Van mentions.
Yep. I don't think it'll even make it to the 2013 worst of list, because it's just that unremarkable.
It's not that bad.
No.
I mean, it's awful, but it's not that bad.
No. Yeah.
Ugh, poor Creep Van. I gotta get out of my system now.
Yeah.
Creep Van.
Alrighty.
Done. I'm good.
So, that's it. We'll talk to you guys next week. Bye!
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
If you wish to contact Devour the Podcast, you can reach us by email at CenobiteDave, that's CenobiteDave, @gmail.com, or Maven1974@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @DDelamorte, DDelamorte, or Maven1974. To visit the site, go to devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. And now you can leave a message on our fancy new voicemail at 760-661-7280.
I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare.
Devour.